Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for tuning in to Scenes of Violence on Fire Engineering's Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Steve Hamilton. We use this platform to talk about all things violence-related with fire, EMS, and law enforcement, with the nexus of fire and EMS, of course. And this evening's guest is Sheriff Leon Lott. Sheriff Lott is the sheriff for Richland County Sheriff's Department in Columbia, South Carolina, and he also happens to be my sheriff, for which he graciously and to the opinion of some foolishly made me a reserve deputy about 11 years ago. Sheriff Lott, are you with us, sir?
Yes, I am. Good to be with you tonight.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we look forward to talking with you. If you wouldn't mind, some of the listeners are from all over the country and they're not too familiar with your background. Can you give us a quick synopsis of your law enforcement background?
Yeah, I've been a cop for 45 years, been the sheriff of Richland County, which is here in Columbia, South Carolina, the capital city for South Carolina. For the past 24 years, just got reelected for and started my seventh term. You know, I think it's very important that, you know, as a leader of the largest law enforcement agency in the state, that, you know, we be a leader and that we set the tone on a lot of different things. And, you know, you just mentioned one of them, reserve deputy. I didn't give it to you. You earned it. You know, you went through many hours of training to become a reserve deputy for Richland County. We have a very large reserve deputy program, which for a lot of people, it's a stepping stone in becoming a full-time. But you're a full-time fire service, which I think is important, which I think is also very beneficial to us because it's all public safety and we need to work together.
And I'm glad that you mentioned that because that's going to be a big theme of what we're going to discuss. Today is a historical day for us in society. We inaugurated our 45th president, and that's Joe Biden. Joe Biden is my president. Joe Biden is our president. Those that have personal thoughts and feelings about that, you're welcome to your opinion. I have people in neighborhoods that are hanging American flags upside down. I think that's a bit extreme for your opinion. 4 years ago today, Donald Trump was our president, everybody's president. And your thoughts and feelings about personal stuff is fine for you to have, and it's your right. But once you put a uniform on, your views are no longer yours. You represent that agency, and you need to keep those types of personal things personal. You represent your agency, and you need to do so respectfully, and you need to do so in a manner that doesn't tarnish it. And that doesn't matter if you're a firefighter, if you're a police officer, if you're an EMT, you work for the government. It may be state and local government, but you work for the government. And you need to remember that as we move forward. And similar to wearing masks, people have personal thoughts and feelings about masks. You can have those personal thoughts and feelings when you're not wearing that uniform. That's how I feel about professional football players and other sports athletes that want to kneel for the national anthem. If that's your personal opinion, that's fine. But once you put on that uniform, those aren't your opinions anymore. What are your thoughts on that, Sheriff?
And Steve, I agree with you completely. When you put that uniform, if it's a military uniform or one of public safety, you raise your right hand and swear to defend this country against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and support the Constitution of the United States, and for us, it's the Constitution of South Carolina, too. So, yes, you have to put those feelings you may have aside because that's what you've sworn to do is protect this country and our state. So, and that's our job. And we fight and defend those that want to have that right to be able to kneel at a ball game or not stand for the national anthem. Now, that's a right that we fight and we stand up for. So, again, you may have your personal feelings, but when we put this uniform on, we're one. We're all one. We want to work together, and we all support this country, and that's what we should do. And if you don't feel that way, then you should not put that uniform on. You should not raise your right hand and take that oath of office. I've taken that oath of office in the military. I've taken it in law enforcement, and I take it very seriously, and I live by that. I guess if you want to call it a code, I live by that code, and that's what we expect from all the deputies at Richland County Sheriff's Department, because the same thing. They raise their hand and they take that oath, and that's an oath. And you have a personal choice. If you don't want to take that oath, then you don't wear that uniform. That's a choice. Nobody forces you to be in public safety. Nobody forces you to be in the military. That's a choice that you make. But then you've also got things that you have to do to uphold that choice that you made. And you know, I support those who, you know, feel different, but not when you have that uniform on. You can't do that.
And that kind of leads me, because I'm familiar with your leadership ideology and principles, being a deputy, but I don't think everybody else is. So one thing that is extremely glaring to me and always has been, we do week-long training. So we go through 5-plus days of pretty intensive week-long training. We do combatives. We do firearms. A lot of that stuff is physical in nature. We have a physical agility test. And as the sheriff, by statute, you're not required to do any of those activities. However, every year at week-long, you can be seen out there doing all the things that you ask of the deputies and the Class 1 officers and the reserves and the Class 3 officers to do. And I think that's an important part of your leadership ideology and setting the tone for the agency. It's not just what I say. I'm going to be there with you.
And I'll go back to when I first, you know, I guess gave my introduction. And I said I've been a cop for 45 years. Just because I'm the sheriff and the head of an agency doesn't mean that I put my badge and run away. And I'm still a cop. And I'm always going to be a cop. So that means going out here and doing things that my people do. And I'll never ask somebody to do something that I won't do myself. So as a leader, I think it's very important that you do set a good example, and that's from your beliefs all the way to how you look physically. You know, you can't expect your people to do something physically if you're not able to go out and do it yourself. And, you know, I'm 67 years old, and I don't consider that old. I still go out to the gym 5 days a week to get prepared so I can go out with my people and work with them. Now, as a head of a large agency, no, I don't get to go out as much as I can, but if something's happening and I'm there, I'm going to get involved in it. I think that's what you have to do. But head of an agency sets the tone. That's the role model for everybody who works at that agency, and they're going to follow what you believe and the example that you set. And if you set a good example and you have standards of excellence, not minimal standards. I don't believe in having minimum standards. I think we need to have standards of excellence, send them as high as you can. And then you as the leader, you live those standards, and then you expect your people to do the same thing. And that's kind of been the leadership style that I've had my whole career, is that you lead by example and you get out there and you do it.
And for those that are familiar with the civil unrest that we dealt with in the fall last year, where we had the protests and a curfew was ordered within the city at 6 o'clock, and about 5:30 or so, live TV started to stream some of our more advanced tactical vehicles, and you standing out in front leading the officers and the deputies jointly between Richland County and CPD to enforce that curfew. And for those that would have the opinion that that might be a media ploy, I can tell you a couple of years ago, there's a criminal individual with a long history who has the very rare opportunity to say that he was arrested by the sheriff. Because I remember Region 4, Broad River Road, and suspect, a 10-0 call went out, and he happened to wrong. He went left instead of going right. And you actually, if I remember correctly, you ended up being in the pursuit and you're the one that apprehended him. So that never made the news. It's sometimes people feel that that's not newsworthy, but it goes back to what you said, that you do prepare, because if there is something and you're in the area, you're going to get involved in it.
And I'll go back to May 30th when we did have the riot in Columbia. We had a very peaceful protest earlier that day, and most of those people left. And then we had criminals that went to the Columbia Police Department with intent to burn the building down, and we weren't going to allow that. And you know, I was there, and you know, stood out front. I think that's where I needed to be. I didn't need to be in the back. I needed to be out front, and that's where we're at. And it wasn't for media by no means at all. It was to protect that building and also protect the city. And unfortunately, it took us a little while to get enough troops there to take it back over. So we had some police cars that were burned, some buildings that were vandalized. But once we got the people there, then, you know, we took over. We took the streets back over. And since that day, we had that for a few hours. We have not had one riot since then. Now, we've had lots of peaceful protests, which is good. I mean, lots of peaceful protests. But that was the one day that we had a riot, and since then we've locked up over 100 people that were responsible. Facebook posts, live streaming, body cams, surveillance cameras were able to help us identify those, and we've been doing it. I think that sent a message to those who came to Columbia and thought they were going to hurt people and destroy stuff, that, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning you got a knock on your door and you went to jail. And that word spread very quickly. And you know, here it is, you know, 7:43 on Inauguration Day, and we had absolutely no problems in Columbia today. We had no problems in Columbia on Sunday when everybody thought there may be. We're prepared. We're prepared, and we were ready, and, you know, people came and protested. Very small numbers did, but there was no riots. We're not going to tolerate riots. And that goes back to the community. Community sent a message loud and clear to me, is that we don't want that in Columbia. It's not going to happen, and you stopped it, and we did stop it.
And that kind of jumps into a point that we were going to get into, but it's a perfect time to get into it now. Part of that preparation for civil unrest and understanding that we may have that in Columbia, that required some preparation and some pre-planning. And with that, that included the fire department. In today's day and age, the relationship, especially at the senior level where you are, and obviously all the way down to people out on the road doing operations, how do you see agencies trying to engage in and interact with fire and EMS when we have a nexus that would require all of us to work together in order to accomplish public safety?
And I'm going to go back to 2015 in October 3rd of 2015, when we had the 1,000-year flood in Columbia. And you saw the fire chief, the police chief, and myself, we were one. You saw us for about 2 weeks, where the three of us worked as one, and you saw public safety work hand in hand, the fire department, police department, sheriff's department, EMS. We all worked very closely to make sure that our city wasn't destroyed. And from that point, and we had trained before then, you don't build a relationship when a crisis is going on. You've got to build that foundation a lot sooner. And we've been doing that. We work very closely with our fire department and our EMS. We train together. And after the 2015 flood, we even trained even more. And right up until we had the riot that day, the fire department was there with us, EMS was there with us, and we coordinated our activities. But that goes back to the training that we've been doing, getting ready for something to happen. Never knowing we'd have a riot, but we've trained in the event of natural disasters or man-made disasters. We've been training. So it's very important that you look at this as public safety, not a sheriff's department, not a police department, not a fire department, but public safety. And that's what our citizens expect of us, to work together. So, yeah, we train together. We train a lot. fire department's got a lot of capabilities that we don't have. We got capabilities they don't have. But when you put us together, then you got one heck of a team, and that's what we do. The equipment, the personnel, but you've got to have that training. You can't do it on the fly. You got to have the pre-training and make sure that foundation is built strong. Did I lose you, Steve?
I'm sorry. You hear me now?
Oh, I got you now. Got you loud and clear. I hope you didn't lose me.
Nope, not at all. I'm sorry. I was saying it from May 30th, we took some lessons learned from that. And in preparation for the last 72 hours, we actually changed some of our preparation strategies based on lessons learned from back in May. And not necessarily appropriate to go into those details, but that required sit-down conversations with each of the heads of the relevant agencies, and we were able to do that pretty seamlessly. That's a pretty important aspect to the pre-planning process, is to take lessons that have learned that we know we can do differently that'll make us better prepared. Not that anything was wrong, because everything can be done better, but that requires a good relationship and coordination in advance to be able to accomplish that.
And it starts with agency heads. And if the agency heads are, you know, establishing a good role model and they're working together, then that's going to filter down to your people. And your people going to look at you and say, okay, the sheriff and the fire chief are, you know, they're riding in the car together, they're talking, they're working together. We better do the same thing. So I think it's important that agency heads set that tone, and then it's going to filter down all the way through your people. They understand that's what is expected of them, and that's what they need to do, because the agency heads are doing it. So we need to work together too. So I think that's very important that that the rank and file people see that they see if there's a joint meeting, that the fire chief and the police chief and the sheriff are there together. And we did that in 2015 when we would have the big briefings in the morning. It might be the fire services in charge that day, and they're giving directions. And you know, the day before, it might have been the sheriff's department. So they saw all of us standing in a room working together and not separating and saying, okay, fire's over here and police is here, sheriff's here. They saw all of us together as one team.
And there are agencies out there that just, for whatever reason, they're not there yet. Their senior leadership is, for whatever barriers or obstacles that are set forth, they're just not getting there. The reasons are many. For those who are listening that are not in a senior leadership position, what might they do in that situation where the fire chief and the police chief, they're just not going to sit down and break bread together? They're not going to drink coffee together. If they see the other one walking down the sidewalk, they cross the street and run. What can people do to try to strengthen that relationship without offending their senior leadership and kind of working on being together?
Well, the battalion chiefs are a major or a captain of a district. Some doesn't mean you can't reach out to your counterparts and start talking together. Because I want to tell you, when things go to hell, that's what you're going to be looking at each other, is what can we do to help each other? And you know, we've done that here. So even if your heads of the agencies aren't not setting that good role model, the rank and file people we see tend to get along great. You know, just the people on the truck and the deputies on the scene on the patrol car, when they're at the scene, they're working together. So I think you can still build those relationships, even if the head of the agency is not doing it. But shame on them, because we all work for the same people. It's the citizens of wherever town or city that we're servicing. That's our customers, and we need to provide them the best service. And there's no reason why we should not work together. It's not a competition. And unfortunately, some may view that as there is not a competition. We're all public safety. So we should be working together. But, you know, it's, you know, lo and behold, if you're at the top of the agency and done, then go ahead and start doing it. Reach out to your counterparts. Reach out to those that you're going to be working with every day. And, you know, just have that, you know, that meeting. Just talk about, okay, what do we need to do? This is what we've got. This is our capabilities. You know, we offer that to you. You know, what can you do to help us out? So, you know, when something does happen, then you're going to be able to respond, and then you don't have to meet somebody at that point. You've already done it.
And there's the horror stories, after action reports of situations like active shooter, where fire had set up a command post in one location and law enforcement set up a command post in another location, and the two weren't working well together. For the sheriff's department, we have an incident management team that is recallable, very much like any other special unit. First thing that comes to mind would be an SRT or a SWAT unit. They can be paged and said, hey, we have a major incident. We need you to come in and help manage this incident with an incident command post. And that takes, on the long end, if I understand correctly, around 2 hours at the absolute worst to get the entire team there running and going. And on the fire department side, they're able to pull up with the SUV and set up command and be able to integrate that right away. The integration between our incident management team and other agencies like fire and EMS, that has worked really well from a training standpoint, and from a practicality standpoint. You were a big push in getting that to the forefront of where it is today. How did you go about trying to do that?
Well, it was a relationship, and I'll go back to 2015 when we did have the big flood here, and we all came to that room. The city of Columbia had their operations center, and it wasn't my operations center. It was the city of Columbia, but I was there, and we just worked, and we just did not, you know, we put our egos at the door before we ever came in. There was no turf battles, and we just established it from that point. With incident management, we've pushed that down all the way to our lowest ranking deputies. So on any incident that we have, they know how to set up an incident command right there. A deputy can actually do it and be the incident commander. Doesn't have to be a ranking person. Then they start planning and getting people to go. You know, the fire department comes in, the EMS comes in, and they just plug right on in. So it doesn't have to be the commander's doing it. We pushed it down all the way to the lowest level. And I think that's what's made it successful. And the fire department and EMS knows, you know, we're right there. And there's been times that, you know, the fire's been the incident commander, and they tell us what to do, which is fine. That's what we do. I don't know how to fight a fire. I don't know how to do some of the things, but I can help out, and they tell us what to do. We're going to go do it. And not going to say, well, that's not our job, and you're not going to tell us what to do because we're the sheriff's department. No. Everybody here knows we don't operate that way. And so, again, you got to build those relationships. You got to start training together. You got to build that foundation. That's so important to do it.
I would pity the deputy that actually turned to somebody and said, I'm not doing that. That's not my job, which is well within their capability. I don't think that would be a good conversation.
That would be that for one time. That would be one time, and that'd be a very a good learning experience that they probably would never forget. But again, I would not do that. You know, even as the sheriff, you know, if we're at a fire scene and somebody on the fire truck says, "I need you to go do this," I'm gonna go do it. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do, and we work together. So yeah, I don't think you would see that attitude from anybody from the fire service or EMS. Or law enforcement in this area, because we don't operate like that. And I know it's not like that everywhere in the United States, and it's a shame it's not. We should be working close together. And, you know, just go back to 9/11 on how communications was not established there because of different reasons. You know, we should have learned lessons from that, but unfortunately, we haven't learned all those lessons. we learn from our mistakes, and we should not repeat those mistakes. But sadly, we still have some people that are still doing that.
And it's been discussed on this show before, and I'll bring it up again for those that are not real familiar with law enforcement operations. Incident command for law enforcement, one's got to understand that under most circumstances, a law enforcement incident is over exponentially faster than, say, a fire or an EMS incident. A structure fire, you're going to be there for hours. If you get into a vehicle pursuit that goes a few hundred feet and the individual jumps out of the vehicle and runs and you chase after them, and within a couple hundred feet you have them in custody, the exigent phase of that is over. Now you're going into the investigative phase. Asking a law enforcement officer who's in pursuit to stop after that vehicle crashes and say, okay, now I'm going to establish Main Street Command and start to do – that's not feasible. You're single individual. You got to go catch the bad guy. If we did that, people would get away all the time. So because of that and what resources we have to manage, we're actually performing incident command. We may not say, you know, the corporal may not say, hey, I'm going to be the incident commander for this pursuit, as he's asking the next due in units to block off perimeter streets and things like that. But those functions occur. If it is a barricaded subject or something that's going to be a long period of time with multiple officers, incident command is set up each and every single time. It may take a little bit longer. You may need to get more resources there. But I've heard and listened to individuals jumping off of a bridge, not going after them. And the deputy will say, hey, I'm setting up an incident command. I have an individual jumped off a bridge. I'm going to need fire. I need to activate our dive team. We need to notify Department of Natural Resources. We need to get boats in the water. And that starts to happen because they're aware that this incident is beyond their ability to mitigate with just the officers in the region or the deputies that happen to be on the scene in that moment. So as my fire counterparts are quick to throw rocks at law enforcement, for their incident command, understand that dichotomy between what we do and how many resources we bring to a single incident and the manpower that we have to keep control of. It's a safety thing. If I can see the three officers that are there with me, I don't need to tell everybody that I'm in command. That's not really how that works.
No, and I guess I describe it as controlled chaos. And that's what incident command does. It's a chaotic situation, but then you control it the best you can. And it may not be as formal as you have time to set up, but informally it's getting the same result. And that's somebody who's organizing it, directing the resources where they need to go, and controlling what's going on and for the safety of everybody. So it's exactly what – and we know incident command works. That's probably the bottom line as far as I'm concerned. It works. And so we should be using it. And that's why we train all of our deputies on it. Everybody gets trained on that from the bottom all the way to the top. And we understand it and we use it. Now, I hear it almost every day. If we got a car chase and then a foot chase, somebody takes control, becomes the incident commander, and starts directing people and where to go. So we set up a perimeter, and we're not just running over each other and leaving gaps. And that's, you know, that's incident command right there. You're actually taking that chaotic situation and you're controlling it.
Exactly. And we moving on to like day to day types of interaction between deputies or law enforcement officers and fire and EMS, we recently discovered a statutorial problem for medical patients who are combative or are otherwise noncompliant and potentially exhibiting aggression that could put EMS personnel in harm's way. For a deputy to respond to that event, then control that medical patient with restraints, detain them, take control of them, that opens up a legal quandary to, do you have a legal right to detain that individual? Have they broken a law? And that's been something that we've had to try to negotiate and navigate. And you had a pretty in-depth involvement in that.
Yeah, and to me, it's a simple thing: is that if an EMS worker feels like they're being threatened, and that patient is combative, then that's our job to come in there and control that situation. EMS doesn't get paid to fight somebody; we do. You know, that's our job. We're trained; we have equipment to fight people and control them. To allow EMS to do their job, and it may be saving somebody's life who don't want to be saved, but that's what we're going to do. So EMS calls for us, we're there, and we're going to do what we need to do and allow them. We're going to protect them. You know, they're our brothers and sisters, so we're going to be there to protect them. And we get those calls quite often, and we expect if the EMS calls and says we've got a combative patient, then we're going to get our butts out there quick, and we're going to do what we need to do to protect the EMS people, but then also make sure that person gets the medical treatment they need.
And if someone is communicating a threat, that's a chargeable offense.
If the
EMS worker feels it.
Yeah, and if necessary, yeah, we'll put the handcuffs on them and we'll place them under arrest. Sometimes we just have to restrain them and calm them down. And you know, I'm going to go back to the training that you talked about, your week-long training. You know, that's the reoccurring training that you get every year after you get your basic training. But along with that training that you described, we also have de-escalation training, how to de-escalate a situation and calm someone down that's in a stressful situation or having some type of crisis. You know, we teach our deputies how to de-escalate that situation, crisis intervention training. So you may be able to do it without ever having to put your hands on someone, but, you know, we're there. So we can do a combination of both. We can do the physical part, but we can also do the verbal part and de-escalate the situation.
And we have a fair reputation of being aggressive and hard, but fair and honest with the citizens that we go out and do road patrol with. They know what to expect. They know we're going to be courteous. But if you're doing something wrong, we're going to deal with that. And I think simple command presence, that first level of force, just showing up and being there, can help keep a situation from getting out of hand in the first place. So again, you know, they call and say, "Hey, we need some help," and we show up. And a lot of times,
right,
that's all it takes.
Right. They see somebody from fire service, somebody from EMS, and they don't see the weapons that we may have, and that can be non-lethal all the way to lethal weapons. And, you know, they understand that they don't have that, but if they see a deputy there, they know that deputy's been trained and it's going to address the situation. Not saying that a fire person can't protect themselves, because I know they can, but it's just looked at sometimes a little bit different by, you know, somebody in the community. So just what you said, that mere presence could prevent something from happening. So that's why we don't hesitate. And I'll tell you, we don't hesitate in calling the fire service. And just the great relationship that we have. A couple of weeks ago, I was sworn in for my term of office and had all the deputies there too. We had the fire department with the big American flag hanging there. They didn't hesitate. We said, "Hey, we think it'd be a great touch to have the American flag." And so they bring the big ladder truck, and they put it up, and they hang it down. So adds a little bit to our ceremony that we had. And that's, you know, that goes just simple things like that where it's not a critical incident. You build that good relationship. Those guys, you know, responded in a heartbeat when we asked them to come do that. And, you know, we thank them, and they thank us. So it's all working together.
And I was there for that, actually. That was
right.
Columbia Fire Department Tower 9. And during that speech, when you were deputizing us all again, you had mentioned that the department had looked at and was starting to dive into mental health and how the sheriff's department can aid in dealing with people that have a mental health problem before it escalates to a use of force or a situation where fire and EMS might be injured, or God forbid, one of our deputies has to make a choice to protect themselves with lethal force. How's that going? Did I lose you? Sheriff, are you still there?
I'm still here. I got you back. Lost the connection there for a second.
Oh, okay, that's all right. Did you hear my question about the mental health?
Yeah,
yes, sir.
And if you heard, you know, I've always said it's not a crime to be mentally ill. And unfortunately, law enforcement is those who have to respond to someone that's having a mental crisis. And that's not a crime. And so we have to find ways to address it the way it should be addressed. And, you know, we're trying to create a program. I think we've got it on the road, on progress, is where we're going to have mental health professionals now that are going to be assigned to the sheriff's department. And we're going to have special trained deputies that will go in an unmarked car, not in a uniform, and someone's having a mental crisis, be able to address that situation. When someone is in a mental crisis and a marked unit pulls up and the uniformed deputy gets up, that amps it up already. So we got to get away from that. And so hopefully this year, that's one thing that we're working toward, and I'm very excited about what we've got going on, and I think we'll be able to get that. And that'll help those in mental crisis, but it'll also get our deputies not having to deal with situations that they shouldn't be in. And unfortunately, we've seen across the United States where those in mental crisis end up getting killed because they've attacked the deputy or attacked a citizen, and law enforcement's had to step in. And maybe if that had been handled in a different way with mental health professionals, then maybe we wouldn't have lost some lives. So we're looking at it, and I think that's going to be a very important program for us.
And I foresee a significant role, especially within the EMS, to have a hand in that, as well as fire doing
right.
Their first responder portion of that. So I'm sure that they're also going to be looking forward to that as well. I greatly appreciate you coming on and your insight into things. Did you have anything you'd like to add to anything that we talked about?
Yeah, I just would like to, you know, just strongly recommend that those who are in public safety, that, you know, build that relationship. If you don't have one now, go ahead and start it today. And if you do have one, just reinforce that even more and keep building that up. I think that's important because we have seen in major incidents, it doesn't matter what uniform you got on, if it's EMS, law enforcement, or fire service, you're standing there together. You're working together. So, break down those barriers, build that bridge. Let's work together because it's the citizens we all work for. We should never forget that. We all serve the same citizens. So let's give them the service that they expect, because if we're on the other side, that's what we would expect too. So when it's our opportunity to provide the best service and standards of excellence, let's do that. So I just would recommend everybody, you know, work together to do that, and I think we'll all be better off, and we all go home and safe at night too.
Well, and I'll repeat a strategy that I've told others before. The fire department, we got a really big kitchen, and we eat pretty much 3 square meals a day. There is absolutely nothing wrong with reaching out to the officers or the deputies that work in your area and say, hey, we're having cheeseburgers at noon. You want to come by and eat? The fire department has been solving problems at the kitchen table since the 1800s. And for the law enforcement side of things, if you're not getting an invite to break bread at the table, just pop in the fire station and just start talking to the guys or bring them some coffee or something where you can just pop in and say, hi.
Hey, bring them donuts. We always get picked on about law enforcement. Bring donuts. Go to Krispy Kreme or somewhere and pick up a couple dozen donuts and bring it by. They'll put a big smile on their face for that.
Yeah, there is not a firefighter in the world that would turn down a donut from anybody. But the cell phones are coming out. if a law enforcement officer shows up with donuts, that's definitely going to be picture time. So. Again, Sheriff, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come onto the show and talk with us tonight. I really appreciate it, and it is and always will be an honor to be one of your deputies.
Well, and I appreciate it, and I want to end with this. Thank you for what you do. You wear a couple hats. You don't have to be a reserve deputy. You don't get paid to do that. That's something you give back to this community. So I just appreciate your commitment and those that are listening today, for putting that uniform on and making that choice and raising your hand and taking that oath that, what you're going to do and serve the citizens. So I appreciate what you do. Appreciate that all your listeners are doing too.
Well, thank you, Sheriff. God bless. And for those out there, that'll be the end of this episode of Scenes of Violence. And I look forward to doing next month's show. And Sheriff, we'll look to maybe have you on again in the future sometime.
Thank you. Everybody be safe.
Everybody, good night. Thank you.